This is an interview conducted with Lynn May, former executive director or vice president of the American Academy of Physician Assistants. Today is Thursday, April the 14th, 2005. Reginald Carter is the interviewer. Lynn, the way I like to start interviews is somewhat of a brief biographical sketch of yourself, and what I mean by that is something about your years of growing up and where you went to school and how you developed certain interests and things that you did before you became involved in PAs and how that came about. So could you kindly tell me about when you were born and where you were born and what that was like?
Yeah, I was born in 1942 in Huntington, Pennsylvania. My father served in World War II. He was gone for over 5 years, so I was pretty well grown when he came back. He had worked for IBM, and IBM was very generous and brought people, and they were expanding at the time. So we moved up to in New York, in the Triple Cities area. And then we moved in different places where IBM plants were in New York State. I went to Kingston High School in Kingston, New York, and then I went on to Union College, which is in Schenectady, New York, and graduated from there in 1964. I went into the Air Force.
And I believe you majored in history.
History. No, yeah. Well, yes, I did. I started off in engineering, but I realized that was not what I was cut out to be. So, I went into the Air Force in 1964. I was in what was called, and still called, the Office of Special Investigation. It's somewhat analogous to the FBI in the Air Force, and I did a lot of background investigations, security investigations, and as I became more experienced, I got into criminal and counterintelligence work. I was in Vietnam in 1987-1988. Originally I was stationed in Saigon and came back there, but I did a lot of traveling around the country, TDY, Pleiku, Trang, places like that. After graduation, or after getting out of the service in 1968, and I was in Saigon during the Tet Offensive, which was an exciting time. 1968, I got married and went to UCLA graduate school, and there that was a history major. I got my master's, did all my work for my PhD. But I got a job offer to go work in Washington. I worked in the U.S. Department of Labor. That was 1981. And I continued to try to work in my PhD, but unfortunately I got better jobs, and I went over to work in the White House. And I was there through the last year and a half of the Nixon administration, all the way through the Ford administration. And I became Deputy Director of the Domestic Council, which is a small agency within the White House that tracks domestic issues, works with the various departments, cabinet secretaries, and whatever, to sort of organize the work of the White House. And so we would draft speeches, proclamations, schedule meetings where the President or the White House bureaucracy would interact with the cabinet departments and things like that. And when Mr. Ford lost the election, I was out on the streets. So I was very interested. I did a lot of work with trade associations and professional societies, and I thought that would be something I'd really like to do. By that time, I'd sort of given up interest in an academic career because I'd gotten involved in all this exciting stuff. So I got a job working as the executive director, I think the staff was about three or four, of the Illinois Healthcare Association, the Nursing Home Association in the state. And I was there for a couple of years. We had a big expose on nursing homes in Chicago. They were not members of ours, but I really cut my teeth on dealing with public relations and legislation in a very tense situation. I was offered a job to be the lobbyist for the national organization, American Healthcare Association. So in 1979, we came back and were in Washington. I worked out for a couple of years. I went back into the Reagan administration and in the Department of Health and Human Services. I was Deputy Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs for about a year and a half, and then I went to work for HIPAA, the Healthcare Finance Administration. I was Associate Administrator there. I did that for several years and started looking around on the outside, and that's when a search firm came to talk to me about the American Academy of Physician Assistants.
Did you learn, when did you first learn about PAs, or did that come across? Was that with the HIF?
Oh, yeah, when I was with the HHS, so there was a lot of rhetoric and a lot of interest in PA issues. Although I don't recall any specific thing that we did, but certainly that was a major break, or departure in terms of non-physicians performing physician work.
The position came open with the American Academy of PAs. How did you become aware of that? Was that something that you just ran across in an advertisement, or was it by word of mouth? Or
I think I was looking, and a search firm or somebody was doing a search on the thing and contacted me. And of course, you develop a network of friends and contacts in Washington. So I really can't remember exactly how it happened. I do recall that I was kind of looking at two jobs at the time. Mm-hmm. One was joining a lobbying firm who did a lot of work in health research. The head of that had contact with me, and he was very interested in me coming to work for his firm. And at the same time, the PA job came up. Mm-hmm. And I think my decision was I really wanted to run something. You know, I'd worked as a lobbyist, and it's very interesting and a very honorable career, unlike what most people think, but I thought the idea of running an organization, and I very much liked the people I met at the AAPA.
I believe the position had been vacant for a little while before you took it. It seems to me, as I recall, Carl Fasser was kind of the acting during his presidency and was coming back and forth from Texas, so there was some gap in time.
I think there was, several months.
A number of months. When you met those folks and you began reading the literature and understanding where the profession was, I believe you were the third vice president, and so the profession was still quite young. And
Don Fisher had been there a long time, and I think it really got the organization started, and he was succeeded by Peter Rosenstein,
right.
who did very good work as well. So.
What was appealing about it? I mean, you said you wanted to run something. Was there other things that kind of got you to?
What I like about association work is that a lot of your focus is public policy, which I developed a taste for in Washington. I'd worked for the nursing home. I mean, healthcare was not an area that I thought I would really be interested in, but once you get into it, it's fascinating, and it's sort of endless. There are issues that go on and on, so you have to make progress by small steps, but it's a fascinating field. The other part about association work is that you're also running an organization, you're in a business, and that appealed to me as well. So the two prongs of public policy and yet running an organization and making it grow and helping it develop.
Where was the national headquarters when you came on? Was it in Crystal City?
Yeah, it was in Roslyn, which is right across the river, Potomac River from D.C. It's in small sort of urban area of Arlington called Roslyn, a number of high buildings, and we rented property there, and I'm trying to think how many of the staff were. I'm thinking about 15, 16 people.
Yeah, I think it says that there was 19 when you left. Yeah. So
it could have been even smaller. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we did a lot of shuffling around, but it was fun. We had some great people.
Actually had a chance to meet the board and reflect over where the academy was and the environment of the day. There must have been a priority list kind of developed in a sense of where to spend time. Do you recall what those priorities were?
Well,
for
I think
the academy?
One of the things that was deemed essential is some sort of coverage by federal payers, Medicare and Medicaid, and also that would stimulate private insurers. Central tenet has always been that PAs are dependent practitioners. I think that term may be a little bit outdated, but certainly they're not independent. They work under the supervision of physicians. and they're really part of a larger team of care deliverers. And so I think Medicare coverage was both an economic but also a an identity, putting you on the map, if you will. Also, as I recall, a year or two before I came on board, the federal government had come out with a report that sort of predicted a glut of physicians, and that really created a pull. I mean, there was a lot of morale issues, I think, within the academy at that time, mm-hmm. because there was a fear that maybe that this profession was going to die, and I just couldn't believe it. I mean, because you've got a very well-trained individual who is somewhat entrepreneurial in terms of what their clinical activities are, and their cost, the relative cost of training or educating a PA versus a physician. So I was convinced that this was going to really take off, and my job was to make it happen. And I think the AAPA is always focused to some extent on the profession, because it's hard to separate the organization mm-hmm. from the profession. In my current activity, that's something, but the idea of focusing on the development of the profession, not just servicing the members. I mean, you have to service members, you have to do things right, you have to build up your membership base, but taking the excess and focusing on the opportunities and development of the profession was very important.
Was there a PAC committee already, or public action committee apart when you got there, or is this something you had to work on and build to something?
Well, that's a hard question, because I cannot recall that, because in the several organizations I've been involved with, mm-hmm. but certainly we put a lot of focus on that. Mm-hmm. And political action is a way within the American system where you can raise money from individuals and through an organization and apply it towards...
Did the Academy have its own lobbyist, or was that something that happened?
Well, I think when I was hired, there was a feeling that you can get a twofer, that you can get an executive director or executive vice president and a lobbyist. Well, I said, you know, take your pick. You have one or the other. So not too long after that, we hired a full-time lobbyist. We had a government relations officer. Mm-hmm. Cole Garrow was the head of that, and a very talented person. We need somebody to work the hill.
And so one of the successes was getting the Medicare...
Yes, that was a roller coaster. Bill Finnefrock was the person that we hired, and he was very influential in that. But as we got through it, we had a curve thrown at us, and that is that the Healthcare Financing Administration made the argument that since PAs cost less to educate and cost less to... in terms of salary, that you had to have some differential reimbursement, and that led to a lot of soul searching. But
we came up with 80% or something, I believe.
I think it was less than that at the time, but yeah, it has grown. But in any case, in Washington, it's like playing football in National Football League. You take what the defense gives you. So, and while people were disappointed in the long run, I felt that that was a good start, and certainly I think has made a big difference. Mm-hmm.
Working with the leadership at that time, I found PAs to be very dedicated to growing their profession, and you've worked with other groups. Is that something reflected on you, how interested and how much volunteer time and how much ownership these leaders took of the academy? And
yeah, I think organizations like this go through growing pains. Generally, you start out with the volunteers do everything, and as you develop staff and to some extent bureaucracy, then things begin to change. But certainly the PAs were very dedicated people. They were interested in doing some great things, and I think we had some very talented people at the time. Charles Huntington was the president, and then Judy Willis. And,
the first woman president.
Yes, and Judy was... developed a project, and I can't recall the name of it, but it was a conference that kind of looked ahead and trying to assess where things might be going, and in doing so getting more focus by physicians and yeah. others about where the PA movement and where it was going and so forth. So we had a lot of very, very dedicated people. Some of the meetings were very intense. And there was a gradual transition, I think, where volunteers maybe did less and focused on bigger picture issues, and staff focused mm-hmm. on running the meetings and not getting the day-to-day work done.
The fellowship, how did that come about? And I believe Marshall Sinback was the
first
one.
Other organizations have done this, especially if they're in the Washington, D.C. area, of identifying people who have the time and interest to learn the Washington scene, to become involved in health policy, and that was the intent of that. And Borough Welcome, which is located here, and Research Triangle was very helpful in that. In fact, I'm having dinner tonight with Cliff Parrish.
Oh, great. Cliff, I said hello.
Yeah, a Borough's Welcome fellow, a Borough's Welcome official that we dealt with. And so having that done, I think, was very, very important.
Do you recall what Marshall's, what mainly he was looking at while he was there as the first one?
I think he was looking at legislation. Mm-hmm. Each one kind of shifted their focus mm-hmm. to some extent, mm-hmm. but it was more what's going on in D.C. and how to, the Medicare issue was still current at the time, and mm-hmm. And provided some support and development in the area of legislation and government.
Okay.
You go, Ren.
Well, there's one more question, then we'll turn off the tape and we'll come back. The feeling of billing our own building or having our own building, I know we were renting up to that point in time. Do you remember when that first came up as a discussion, and maybe what was the driving force on it?
Probably the day I walked into the door there. I mean, it was obviously
on top of each other.
We had enough room, but as the staff expanded and the operations expanded, and the reserves of the organization. So we needed space. We needed a place of our own, but also thought it was an important symbol. Again, going back to this this Geminac, that was the report.
Geminac.
There was going to be a lot of physicians, and therefore physician extenders was a stillborn idea. I think building the building, and I remember, public relations are kind of a thing that I do, and excuse the expression, putting spin on things is really important. And I think we tried to build it as something that is important not only for what it offers us, but in terms of the symbol. And that's why basically we went for our own building. Mm-hmm. Now I must say I woefully underestimated the growth of the AAPA. Mistake I've tried to avoid in my current job, so that we probably should have gotten a much larger building. But still, I think the symbology and excitement, not only among the staff, but among the membership, is really mm-hmm. important.
Okay, we're going to interrupt the tape here, and then we'll pick right back up. Lynn, let's continue talking about the move to our own building as an academy. You said that was as much, it was needed space-wise.
Should have built more space.
But it was also having our own building and in a prominent area, also represented and being brick and mortar, that this was a profession here to stay. It wasn't going to go away. What was the pros and cons? I'm sure some people were very for that. I mean, this was a big step. It meant a lot of fundraising. Academy wasn't sitting on that much money in those days. So this meant that people were going to have to give a good bit of that to underwrite it. So there was a major marketing.
Yeah, well, there was a fundraising campaign. I don't think it was absolutely critical for make or break, but it was helpful to have that, and I think bring people into the process, make them feel that was kind of their home away from home and the home of the profession, and I think it was pretty successful.
And if I remember, in Alexandria, that following year or something, you got an award for the architect?
Yes, we did. I think, and it is very distinctive because it's on a triangle, mm-hmm. pie-shaped piece of property. And I always look for it when I come into Reagan, Reagan Airport, not Reagan National, and look for the thing just to get my bearings and say, yeah, there it is, it's still there.
Another thing that happened under your watch was the Academy actually publishing its own journal. At that time it had been vended out, and there were inherent problems with that, but eventually came. What was some of the reasoning behind doing that?
Well, I think some of it was cost, some of it was more editorial control, more developing something that we wanted. There were a number of issues that, and I remember some of the negotiations that went on. We had a competitor publication that was doing better in terms of advertising and more visibility.
That was a PA magazine or PA journal? Or?
Yeah. And I think Dave Mittman and some of the others were involved in that sort of thing. So it was an effort to get it going in a stronger way, and it was probably a good decision at the time. I mean, it's a decision organizations like the AAPA have to make from time to time, and that is, do we take sort of a ready-made, cookie-cutter kind of approach to this sort of thing and get some revenue and have a publication, or do you try to do more? Of all the issues, though, I that one is not as clear-cut in my mind, maybe as some of the other things that occur. It was always a problem.
Mm-hmm. And that involves CME because right. Part of the journal's part, and at that time the Academy logged CME. That has changed recently.
Yeah.
The National Commission's taken that over. And that led us to the conferences where nationally PAs could get a lot of CME, and that grew just...
Yeah, there was tremendous growth in that, and I'm astounded at the numbers today. But in part, like many societies that represent professions, it was part continuing education, part governance, but they were, by and large, very successful and grew year from year. The location of the event determines where comes to some extent in terms of the attractiveness of the property and accessibility and cost and room rates and everything like that. But yeah, I think they were very successful. And they not only provide opportunity for people to get continuing education, and the business of the society goes on with their place, opportunities for people to get together and compare notes and share experiences.
Anything stand out in your mind about that first conference that you went to and
San Antonio.
Meeting everyone.
I think the first meeting was in San Antonio, and
the Riverwalk.
Yeah, I recall that the meeting went very well, except for a couple of people walking into the river by accident. But the way the board operated, I think, and the way I felt it should be operated, we're not in sync at that time, so there was a little tension in there. But it was a good meeting, and I think we were, this is true when any executive director, CEO, whatever, comes into an organization. There's always a honeymoon period, and there's a time of feeling out. But there's also, where are we going? What are we trying to do? And I think that's a role that staff can provide, and an executive can provide. Sometimes there's a tension in terms of people who are sort of used to the status quo and people that want to make change. And my feeling is that a society has to change or die.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to grow, and it has to find new meaning constantly. And bringing that about can be a very interesting process. I mean, throughout my whole career it's been that way.
But it is a balancing act, and I think this one is a vice president or a CEO between your board and your staff and being daily in the trenches and those things. So how do you manage that? What's the most important thing that you found in dealing with boards, people, trying to get change, understanding staff needs, trying to communicate that?
Well, I think you have to, there has to be some vision. Hopefully it's a shared vision.
Mm-hmm.
Among all the players, whether the board, and then if you have a representative body, the membership at a large, as a whole, the staff. But I think the most important thing is understanding the reality that you work in. And preparing yourself and your members to deal with reality rather than, myth and tradition are really important in an organization, and the culture that from which your members come and the organization, they don't change a lot over a period of time. As new generations come in, they change. But myth can get in the way of dealing with reality and change. And so that is the most difficult thing. But I think doing strategic planning, getting exposure to your leaders to the outside world, engaging in public relations, public government relations, so on and so forth. Then you start begin to understand how you really fit in. I mean, I remember we went to the AMA for years, and went to the meetings and said, "We're the AAPA," and you know, they kind of, you're less than doctors, you're wannabes and whatever. But over a period of time, by focusing on certain issues, supporting certain things, and coming back and knocking on the same door after time, acceptance came. Mm-hmm. I mean, we always had good support from the American Academy of Family Physicians. Although I remember one of the first missions that I had at the AAFP meeting was President Judy Willis and Vice President Glenn Combs and I. We had to go back there and do a peace mission because the Academy had some, I'm not exactly sure of the issue, but we had, I think it was when the FDA or somebody was thinking about regulating health care more closely, and the Academy had made the decision to support that, and the physicians opposed it. Well, it didn't happen, so our job was to get out there and try to smooth the troubled waters, and we did. But I've seen the growth and acceptance among physicians, individual physicians, and organized medicine for the concept of the physician extender. And I think the AAPA has made that happen. And I think the work of the individual PA, their spirit of entrepreneurship and their willingness to focus on patient care has really made that happen.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that came about was the commissioning of Navy and eventually Army and Coast Guard candidates, and that was something that worked on for years and years.
Right, it was a very interesting project, and you had the disparity between the Air Force, which mm-hmm. had commissioning, and the other two branches of service. And having grown up in federal political issues and getting involved in the military, I mean, it's just a different environment and how things get done. Fortunately, we had some really excellent people in those branches of the service who were willing to, and who had influence. You know, they were involved here in Washington, they were stationed, they were recognized. And,
so those were PAs or PAs and MDs?
Yeah, PAs and MDs. Mm-hmm. PAs. I remember Jimmy Keller was mm-hmm. one of the guys that was involved in that. He was just first rate. So it took a number of years to get it done, but it was well worth doing, and I'm proud of that. I'm proud of all these things, but that one I thought was, because it was so different, it was sort of an alien environment. I mean, I'd been in the military, but trying to get this done took a lot of effort.
Any thoughts about staff and anything that stands out in your mouth, in your mind about something that you all did together, whether it could have been fun or just something you had to get done?
We were all younger and probably partied more in those days. The conferences are always a very trying time for staff because you do your normal work, but then you have to pull all this together and make it work, and there's always the unknowns, transportation, the hotel. I mean, but it was always a great opportunity to come together. And I remember one time, we used to have breakfast meetings, and it was the meeting in San Francisco, I believe, and some things had happened in the program the day before. I won't go into them, but might be a little embarrassing to some people. But anyway, we were so tired and we just sort of speculated what might have happened. And I remember actually being on the floor, pounding the floor, and I couldn't stop laughing. So, but we had a great staff and really dedicated people, and they're many of them have been there for decades now. And I see them from time to time, and certainly talk to Steve occasionally, and Nicole probably more. They're a great group of people.
Any other reflections, anything I haven't asked you that you now can recall on the spot? I know it's hard to do, that stands out. Other things that you're very proud of, accomplishment?
Well, I sort of cut my teeth in association management at the AAPA. We didn't have a lot of resources, you know. I mean, it was not that we were struggling, but it was always difficult finding money, and you know, you had to put things off. But I think there was a lot of forward movement. I think we tried to position ourselves in the right vein and on the right issues. and always looking for, and focusing on the real issue is good patient care. I believe that associations, not-for-profit organizations, had better benefit the public first of all. But if you're focusing on your members only and their needs, and you're not looking at what you're doing, does it affect, is it in the public interest, does it improve whatever industry you're in this case patient care, is it compatible with the other institutions and groups are trying to do, if you can put your activities in that vein and do the right thing, then I think you can't lose. And I think that was my experience at the AAPA. Did we have some difficulties? Sure. Did we make some mistakes? I'm sure we did. But the organization has moved forward. I read the newsletter. I get it still. I keep track. I take a great deal of pride in where the organization and where this profession is coming from, or has come to, and where they're going to go. And it's a great thing. Very satisfying.
Thinking of people that you met along the way, and I know this is putting you on the spot because you're going to forget someone. I know you eventually met Stead and some of the early pioneers. Any of those memories, any things went through your mind?
Yeah, I was, they were quite diverse in mm-hmm. personalities and backgrounds and whatever. Certainly Dr. Stead has been a spiritual influence, I guess, for the profession. In my current position, I wish we had someone like him that we could point to.
Dick Smith was another medic.
Most of the people by the time I came on board, they were still involved but somewhat tangentially, mm-hmm. but they were always willing to talk and show their interest and support for the PA profession. It's been an interesting experiment. I guess if you can call it, it's not an experiment anymore. Mm-hmm. Certainly PAs are a fundamental part of the healthcare environment and medicine, and I'm glad to see they're finally beginning to think about adopting or beginning to adopt the concept elsewhere around the world. There's a great deal of support if you look elsewhere. And mm-hmm. again, where I'm at now, we have widespread presence everywhere around the world. But I think, and I must say that the leadership of the AAPA, not only the board members, but the people involved in the committees, and they're really intense. They're really concerned about where they're going. But yet I can see a positive evolution. The people coming in are better academically prepared, perhaps, than the early people. They go through all the ups and downs that they have to walk the talk. Maybe not, but that's the way things occur. But it's been a great relationship, and I think very fondly of my experience. And still a cheerleader.
Well, thank you for giving us this interview and being with us today. And for the record, let me personally thank you for the time and effort that you gave. And when it was under your watch, we did well. So
well, I had a decision to take a job lobbying or do this, and I made the right decision.